Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Tyler.
How are you?
I'm doing well. My grandmothering role saw that my granddaughter Georgia turned 4 last weekend. So we had a birthday party for her. And in my mother role, my daughter Kelly turned 23 on Sunday.
What is that, a house full of Scorpios?
We have a house of Scorpios. Although my daughter Kirsten, Georgia's mom, would argue that Georgia's on the cusp of Libra and Scorpio. But having raised a Scorpio, I know better.
Okay, yeah. Hey, yeah.
But my older daughter Kirsten is 33. So I have been parenting and educating parents for a really long time. You know, longer than I imagined I would be doing this. Because when I first had Kirsten, you know, I wasn't a therapist. I was actually a disc jockey. You may not know that about me, but I worked spinning discs. We actually did discs back in the day when I started. But I had no intention of becoming a licensed therapist. I really liked radio. But, you know, throughout the years, things changed, and I ended up getting my degree and kind of specializing in the parenting part of my therapy license for a long time. And I wrote a program called The Parent Way. And so I spent a lot of time steeped in the parent world. And having raised Kirsten, and my girls are 10 years apart, so I had two very different experiences getting to raise children. And it's interesting because I never intended to spend my life in the parenting world, but I've kind of found myself here. And this weekend, since it was George's birthday, I went up to the party, and so I got to spend the afternoon with my daughter and all of her friends, their 30-something crowd, and all of their children, 18 children there. It's quite a large birthday party. Clearly, Kirsten didn't follow the family rule of you have as many children to the party as your child is old, but they were being very generous at the park. So they had 18 children, but watching the parents parent and talking with the parents was very interesting because I had this moment where I felt that either the parenting world has moved on without me, or there are a lot of new trends, maybe fads in parenting that are playing out that are like a shiny object, which I'm sure when I was a young parent, there were new ideas. You know, we were moving from Dr. Spock to Terry Brazelton's work. But that was, you know, just one move. There weren't 18 different parenting styles that were out on the bookshelves. And so I feel for parents today a little bit because the bookshelves on parenting are packed. And then forget the bookshelves. You have all of the websites and Instagram influencers and, you know, so many places to get information on how to parent. And I tried to have conversations a little bit with some of the parents, like, what is your style, or what is your philosophy, or what are some things that you're, you know, following as far as your parenting idea? And my daughter kept looking at me saying, don't therapy my friends. It's a birthday party. And I said, but I'm just curious because it seems like either they have a really strong sense of what their parenting is, or they have absolutely no plan at all because it just felt a little willy-nilly to me. And So I came home from that not feeling distressed at all. They're all wonderful children and lovely parents. But the part that I always focused on in my work as a parent educator or parent trainer was the parents themselves, that I was never excellent with the children piece of it. I wasn't a child development major. I don't have the big background in working with young children, but I had a really strong connection to and sense of what parents needed while they were parenting. A lot from my own experience as a mom, but also working with parents, that when you have so much information on how to parent out there, parents end up exhausting themselves trying to be perfect or trying to do everything or trying to have a plan or trying to meet all of the needs of their children. And then when parents reach levels of exhaustion and burnout, then they become completely ineffectual as parents and start bringing in behaviors that they never wanted to do as parents because they're tired and stressed and not sure what else to do. And so when I see young parents today and at this party, I mostly am focusing on how are they doing? How are their relationships? How is their, you know, sense of mental health and well-being? Are they getting their needs met? Because they're all working many more hours than I ever did when I was a young mom and trying to pay their mortgages and all of the bills that are also different than when I had young children. They have many more expenses than I ever did. And so I'm always checking in with their mental health, and I feel that a lot of them maybe you're not struggling with the parenting piece more than we did, but they're struggling with the personal piece, the how do I make this work piece more than we ever did. There's a lot more self-doubt. I think a lot more questioning of how do I do this? How do I, you know, make this work in my family? Because there aren't a lot of guides out there. No one's done this. No one's tried to have student debt and a mortgage this high and two big jobs and parent. And the part that made me saddest was that a lot of the parents, when I said, so are you going to have any more children, or, you know, how are you feeling about this? A lot of them are like, I don't want to have another child because it's too expensive. And that's heartbreaking to think that now we're parenting or limiting our family size because of financial reasons and not because of our own personal ability to parent. So I came home with a lot of thoughts. And I thought, who better to talk to than my friend Megan Englert? Because Megan and I work together at the Child Development Resource Center. And Megan is many years younger than I am. And she has a background in child development and is a licensed therapist and is masterful with children. And she's also a mother of two young children and married and a homeowner. So she's right there in that demographic of young parents trying to make it all work. And so I called her and I said, Megan, come down on Tuesday and let's just have a conversation about your experiences as a parent today, both personally and professionally, because Megan has also started in her spare time from all of her other duties a business called Out of the Box Parenting. So she does consulting for parents to help them grapple with some of the things that we're going to talk about today. So I'm really looking forward to being educated a bit by one of my favorite parent educators and opening up the phone lines and allowing you an opportunity to call in with some questions and concerns you might have about parenting, because it's hard to know where to go to for good guidance and actual healthy advice. There is a lot of information on the market and, as I said, in influencer land, but you really have to be careful because a lot of these people don't have kids that are older than your own. And how can you know if you've done well as a parent unless you've raised children and you've seen the outcome of your theories? So today's a great day to call in. Our number is 805-781-3875. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. You can also send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com if you want to chime in, or follow us on our Instagram page, our Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT, or our Facebook, The Reluctant Therapist, to keep up with show information and links to different shows. And there's a picture of my granddaughter and I up today, so you might want to check that out. You can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org, or you can podcast our shows any way you look for podcasts, either through Apple Podcasts or NPR Podcasts. Search A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, and our shows will be available for you to listen at your convenience. So we're off on our way today. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back to start our talk. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And welcome, Megan Englert, to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I appreciate you being available on such short notice. You were able to move things around. You have two young children.
Yes, I do. A four-year-old and a two-year-old.
Yes, very young. So thank you for, I don't even know where they are. Are they outside in the car?
Yeah, you know, I asked them to go, you know, catch some flies outside.
Yeah.
No, they are at school today. Okay. That's something that's started new this last couple months is that my son joined my daughter at school Tuesday, Thursdays, and they love it. And it's a fantastic school. So I know that they're in good hands and I have some time to myself.
To take a breath.
Yeah.
Or to talk about parenting.
Exactly. Yeah.
So let's just, so other people can know a little bit about you, talk about your background and how you mm-hmm. kind of progressed to where you are opening or creating out-of-the-box parenting.
Right. Well, I worked at the Child Development Resource Center for 10-plus years as a marriage and family therapist there. I did play therapy as well as family therapy. Individuals, sometimes I got some of the older siblings as teenagers. Sometimes I had the parents by themselves. And then I had my daughter, and I went back to work to go to, I went to TEMA, and I was the quality assurance specialist there. And I created plans for the staff who were doing notes for their clients.
And TEMA is Transitions Mental Health Association,
yes. And I helped create documentation guidelines for them, and I really liked creating little booklets for people to use that were user-friendly. And so Out of the Box happened after I had my son, and I combined my two loves, which was helping parents and helping children using some strategic and creative ideas and user-friendly little manuals. So I provide consultation with parents and coaching that comes with your own detailed, personalized plan for your kid using your child and family's strengths and interests to meet your values and your goals that you would like to see. And that comes with text, phone, and email support.
And which is much different than just trying to choose a book off the bookshelf and
yes.
hope that that aligns with your values.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also important to understand that every family has unique circumstances and the parents have different skill sets or temperaments.
Mm-hmm.
So you're actually checking into what the parents are capable of doing and creating a program for them.
Yes, and the time that they have too.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of what I do is creating quick quality time games that they can play with their kids that don't have any materials and little time just to make a connection so that they can get through to bedtime easily.
And I love the idea because I think when, as a parent, if you pick up a book or you read an article or you know, listen to someone talk about their parenting experience and you feel like, oh, I could never be that patient, or I'm not creative in that way, or, you know, I'm not a good cook. And so you can feel defeated as a parent before you even
mm-hmm.
set out. And so it would be so wonderful to be able to say, here are the things that I am good at, or you can help them find out, here are mm-hmm. the things that I am good at, and then to build your parenting structure around those things that you feel confident in and not feel like you're always lacking in some magic parental skill.
Yes, and I'm there too. I lost my objectivity with my own kids.
Okay.
I don't see what will help them in the moment as easily as I can someone else's.
Yes.
In fact, I think I had talked to a client recently and I gave them an idea, and in my head I thought, okay, why wasn't I doing this for the last 3 weeks at home?
Yes.
And I came up with it within 30 seconds for somebody else. So I struggle as well because it's 24/7 the time.
Which is also another good point. How great to have a coach
mm-hmm.
or a guide somewhere nearby and handy that you trust, who knows you, who knows your family, that you can run things by.
Mm-hmm.
Because I appreciate that experience as well, that I felt like I was always kind of guessing along the way, and I didn't really have any mentors or people that I really relied on when I had my first daughter. And so I was watching, you know, Terry Brazelton's show or
mm-hmm.
reading a little bit about, you know, what to do at this age. But then always, again, feeling like, but I'm not that kind of parent, so what can I do? What can I bring to it? And it would have been so helpful to have someone that I trusted who I could call and say, okay, now I'm stuck.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in a standoff with my child.
Yes.
How do I win, or should I walk away?
Yeah. You don't always have to win either. Sometimes it's about winning and losing when you're having a power struggle. It's a hard game because they really want to win.
And so you also have, besides being licensed as a therapist, didn't your mom also do childcare when you're?
She did, yes.
So you had a lot of hands-on experience with children, which most therapists, I want to point out,
mm-hmm.
don't. I think
yeah.
that's what always has impressed me with your work, is that you have a background actually working with children.
I was working with kids when I was one. And she had a daycare in home, I want to say when I was preschool or kindergarten, I forget. There were always kids around for a majority of the time. And then at some point it stopped and she did some other things. And I started babysitting at 10, which now
I would not be allowed to do.
Yeah. And I don't know if I would let a 10-year-old babysit my kids either, but I did, and I got a lot of work, and I did that for several years. And then I was a preschool teacher in high school. And then I did child development in college, and I worked at the Child Development Center when I went to grad school to work on clinical psychology to do what I'm doing. I guess now, ultimately, this is kind of where my life has led me.
All of those skills. Mm-hmm. And so my first question always is, what is different? What did you discover was different from what you understood professionally mm-hmm. and all the years working with children, then working with parents, and then becoming a parent yourself?
Yeah. Well, I said, I lost my objectivity for sure. I feel like my patience level is a lot different because I got to go home at the end of the day without kids and sleep. You know, I mean, I sleep well now. I'm okay now, but you know, when they wake up, you're on all the time. And even if you are full-time working, you are on because you're thinking about what your kid is doing and wonder if they're going to be sick today and someone's going to call me and I have to rearrange my schedule. So you're always on all the time. And I think that really does hurt your patience level a little bit. I think I've learned humbly how to apologize to my children a lot more than I thought I would. And that does help the situation a lot. So if you ever feel stuck, I don't know what to do, what am I doing, just apologize to them and say, hey, this isn't going well for me either. This is how I would handle it next time, and model for them what to do. And that can get you out of a lot of sticky situations.
Were you disappointed that you didn't have the magical skills as a mom that you felt you would?
I don't know. Maybe a little frustrated. I think it kind of, I knew it was going to happen right in the beginning because I'm not as good with infants as I am with toddlers. And so that was really challenging for me. And then I knew from that get-go that it was going to be hard. And, you know, my daughter struggled a little bit when she was born. She was in the NICU for a while. And so I think that piece too, how much you fall in love, really surprised me. As well. And so I think everything else as far as disappointment goes was out the window too.
Yeah, it is, because you always had this nice kind of pragmatic approach with children. I would see you at work that you didn't get ruffled and you just saw them as little humans trying their best and were able to, and maybe because there's a little the distance, they're not your blood. But then that shift of now I've made this human.
Yeah.
And that inability to just be as cool because everything, all the stakes feel so much higher at that point.
Yeah. And they don't give you too much space when you actually want it either. It's really difficult. I remember I told my daughter when my son was born, I needed a break. I was feeling overtouched. And she asked me what that meant. And I said, someone's been touching me all day long and I just need 30 seconds to myself. And I'll just set my timer. And when it goes off, we can hug. And she said, okay, mommy, I'm just going to lay on your chest. So it's just, it can be really hard. But that's kind of when I started inventing our own house called the timeout for adults, where we go and take our space and they're allowed to follow us just so they can watch us do our own coping skills and learn from themselves. So that's what I've learned, many different skills from just parenting my own kids that I never thought I would need to know.
A lot of modeling.
A lot of modeling and a lot of remembering my own stuff to take care of myself in front of them.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Megan Englert. She is the founder of Out of the Box Parenting. She's also the mother of two, a four-year-old and a two-year-old. And I invited her in to just kind of talk about parenting from her perspective today and how she sees things have changed maybe for parents or stayed the same. As when she first started the business, and from my perspective, as someone who started parenting 33 years ago and the changes that I see. And we invite you to be part of the conversation. It's a great time to get a question asked about parenting, child rearing concerns. 805-781-3875 is our number. That's 805-781-3875. All right. I have questions.
Okay.
Do you want me to just fire them off?
Sure.
Okay. You talk about parenting in this, again, very pragmatic, non-emotional sense, which I love. And you, one of the things I saw on your, I guess your Facebook page, mm-hmm. was kind of this reframe of, instead of seeing your child as trying to drive you crazy, mm-hmm. they instead are just trying to figure things out.
Yes. Yes. They, you know, I always say that defiance is a developmental milestone.
Okay. They explain that.
They need to go through these struggles. If you can imagine someone, if they've never had struggles until maybe 7 or 8, and then they had something, they would have no idea how to handle that. And so you need to have these defiance moments to teach them how to cope with the difficulty, things that could come up. And also, you need to have them, they need to be defiant to test the limits and the boundaries, because they need to know what is safe in the world, so they feel safe exploring the world and learning about themselves, learning about how to interact with others.
So then what's the difference between a child being defiant and a child just being rude? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, obnoxious? Because I think for people looking on the outside in, maybe to parents, mm-hmm. And their child is kind of standing up to them or holding their ground, and the parents look like they're giving in. You know, what is the difference between giving a child a chance to express how they're feeling but not allow them to control the situation or control you or be
mm-hmm.
rude?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think rudeness and defiance are kind of along the same thing. Even if the parent would allow that or be fine with certain things that they are saying, they're probably testing the environment around them to see how other people would respond to their actions as well. What was the defining question? Sorry, I went off on a tangent there.
No, I didn't really even ask the question, I guess, is what is the difference then between allowing a child to be defiant to test limits and a child who's just being rude and probably unacceptable behavior in the environment they're in? You know, how do you as a parent know? Because I guess from my experience, I see a lot of parents kind of folding to the, my child is just really precocious, or my child's just really, mm-hmm. you know, bright, or my child is different and they need a lot of attention. There's a lot of this fallback that my child is different and special, so mm-hmm. I can't control, or, you know, mm-hmm. I just let them speak out and own the room because mm-hmm. I don't know what else to do. Mm-hmm. You know, so is there a difference between that and also healthy defiance? I think that's a tough one.
It is a tough one. I think it's all part of how things are progressing in their world too. And they'll learn how to behave. If it's not from their parents, their peers will tell them, like, I don't like how you're acting. I'm like, I don't want you to talk to me that way. Things like that can come up. But it's hard to determine what's appropriate and what's not. I think in the end, you just have to say, how is this affecting your family and your relationships? And then you will know if it's a problem or not.
And so as a parent, then, if you are struggling with a child's behavior and you feel like it is impacting your quality of life, you feel tired all the time as mm-hmm. a mom, mm-hmm. you're fighting with your husband because you're both so annoyed at your child that you just take it on each other. Mm-hmm. And when you realize those things, then what is the pullback? You know, how do you set those limits? How does a family create a plan?
Well, yeah.
Of what's acceptable.
I think a lot of the time what I would recommend to do is don't think about the problems exactly as problems or concerns. Think of it as more needs. What do you need to move forward? And then the path will become a little bit clearer to see what it is. Sometimes it's, I need sleep, or I need to back off on my kid on this skill that they're learning right now because no one's learning anything and we all need to relax for a second. It's case by case. It really depends on each kid and each family.
I know, and I always feel like it's a cop-out a little bit as a therapist when someone asks a question, and generally my first response is, well, it depends.
I know, yeah, but it does. You know, yeah. And a lot of what I do is I ask, what is your child's strengths? What are they really good at? Doesn't matter what it is. And what is something they really like to do? Mm-hmm. And you can use those to figure out a good path, because you need the kid's buy-in, and you need the parent to be available to want to work on those things.
So what are your goals for your children? Do you, mm-hmm. do you have kind of a vision of who you'd like your kids to be when they leave home?
Yeah. I don't want to think about that. No, I'm just kidding. I want them to be, obviously, the three things, happy, healthy, and kind would be great. I want them to love what they're doing. I want them to have quality relationships in their life. I want them to feel comfortable telling me anything, really, even if it's back off, Mom. You know, I want them to be able to tell me anything. Because if they can't tell me, they can't tell anybody else. I need them to be not afraid to be themselves.
So assertive children, healthily assertive.
Healthily assertive, yes. I know. I am working on that with my daughter right now. She's having a hard time with telling other people when she doesn't like something, other kids. She has no problem telling me, and that's great. We can practice that. So.
But then how to translate it? Because I think what I'm hearing you say is that we want our children to learn to fully express themselves so that they feel heard and they feel seen and they feel valued. Mm-hmm. But then how to temper that expression when they're in school or with friends or in a different environment that have different expectations for their behavior. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where I feel like a lot of parents struggle, mm-hmm. is that they allow the free expression at home, and then they allow a free expression everywhere they go, and they expect the environments or the other places to adapt to their child, mm-hmm. and not their child learning to adapt to the environment. And I think that's what I've always mm-hmm. struggled with other parents, is their unwillingness to rein in their child or put limits on their child when they're out in public or at school or with other mm-hmm. kids, and expect everyone else to adjust to them.
And I think it also depends, too, because you don't know what their day was like when you saw them out in public, too, because there's been moments where I've been at a birthday party or something that I had to go to and nobody took a nap.
Right.
And they were up at 6 and everything is out the window because they're overtired, slap happy, and nothing I'm doing is working and we can't leave yet. So it's really, it could be hard.
My guest today is Megan Englert. Our number is 805-781-3875. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, if you have a question for Megan, Charlie, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Yeah. Anyway, I want to kind of talk about kind of background material thoughts on parenting. There's a book by George Lakoff is a professor of linguistic cognitive linguistics at UC Berkeley. He talks about the supportive family structure and authoritative family structure. The authoritative family structure, you have one parent, usually the father, but sometimes the mother, is more authoritative, more direct.
Nope. Charlie, you dropped out. You might have to call back in. I'm not sure where he was going with that, but it was mm-hmm. one of the questions I was going to ask you about your parenting style. Mm-hmm. What do you have a specific path or parenting style that you follow?
There's four typical parenting styles. There's unresponsive, permissive, authoritarian, which I think he might have been alluding to possibly, or authoritative, which sounds very similar. And we're kind of in our house more authoritative, which is kind of along the lines of let's talk about it. Let's process it. We do so much processing in our house right now. Actually, last night we were carving pumpkins, or I was carving the pumpkin, and they were watching me, and my mm-hmm. son says, "That pumpkin is sad." And it was a happy face, so I was confused. Why do you think he's sad? And he says, "He doesn't like the cuts, Mama." Oh. So, you know, we're always processing our feelings and how that makes us feel and other people's feeling. And so I think he put that onto the pumpkin.
He was projecting.
He was. He was. He was. But we talk about a lot of things. We process a lot of things as much as they're able to.
And I don't think a lot of people, unless you're in the business, realize that there are different parenting styles, mm-hmm. and the difference between authoritarian and authoritative. Authoritarian would be considered a little more old school. Mm-hmm. A child is to be seen and not heard.
Because I said so.
Because I said so. Yeah. Yes, I'm not going to get out of my chair. Don't make me get out of my chair. Mm-hmm. Kind of, we called it armchair parenting. Mm-hmm. A lot of coercion, guilt used mm-hmm. in authoritarian parenting. Mm-hmm. But it's also seen a lot today because in more strict or conservative households or very strongly yes. religious households, they tend to be a little more authoritarian because they believe in a hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
So a parent in charge, ultimately the father in charge. And then the authoritative parenting that you're talking about is more of an assertive, empathic, mm-hmm. teaching people to speak their mind, but also how to adapt to and adjust to the environment. When you look at the role of authoritative parents, they have high expectations mm-hmm. and high responsiveness
yes.
to the needs of their children. Authoritarian parents tend to have low responsiveness to
yes.
the emotional needs and very high expectations. options. Mm-hmm. But the one we don't often talk about is permissive parenting.
Right.
Because if you look at parenting in general in our culture, that is the parenting we see most today.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't talk about it, I think, because I don't know why we don't talk about it. But this style of parenting is high responsiveness, low expectations,
mm-hmm.
where the parents want to be their child's best friend, where they're apt to call the school and chew out a teacher,
mm-hmm.
where they always are going to go in and rescue their child,
mm-hmm.
where they are spending a lot of money trying to buy for the child all of the best
mm-hmm.
things they can purchase, that it's very much about wanting to give to your child everything you believe they need, but with very little expectations for the child's buy-in and behaviors
mm-hmm.
and discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons why permissive parenting, and I'm going to say this tonight, and I know that you're going to roll your eyes, but that's okay. One of the reasons permissive parenting is so popular is because it's way easier than authoritative parenting.
I'm not going to roll my eyes.
You're not? Okay.
No, it is easier. I mean, I've been there. Sometimes I'm just like, here, I need a minute, you know?
Yeah, whatever, and I think, makes you quiet in this moment.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the reasons why if permissive parenting is on the rise is either because there's a hard time with cohesion within different caretakers, possibly. That could be what's going on. Some mom guilt or dad guilt, depending on what's going on.
Right.
And low coping skills for the parents. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, when I'm frustrated and I have not been taking care of myself, I am not great. I either swing from permissive to authoritarian sometimes.
Yes.
I have those days and moments because I'm human. And I think it's okay if those things happen. Like I said, again, just apologize. Like, I'm really sorry. You thought you were going to go get ice cream later. We're not going to do that anymore. We're going to do this instead, you know, or I'm really sorry I yelled at you. I'm going to do it this way instead, and kind of find your way back to authoritative if you can. But it swinging around is it happens.
And I guess that is important to point out that permissive parenting is easier because it doesn't
mm-hmm.
require the parents to hold the line or to have consequences and follow those consequences. It really is, you know, I don't have a bedtime. I just wait for my child to fall asleep somewhere on the floor or
mm-hmm.
because there's a lot of work that goes into getting a child to sleep on time.
It's easier in the short run.
Yes.
For sure.
Because then in the long run, when you are stressed, when you need your child to do
mm-hmm.
something,
mm-hmm.
you are going to revert to authoritarian because your child's not going to respond
yes.
because you haven't been having any expectations.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to use brute force then to get them to do those things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the downside.
Yes.
Our number is 805-781-3875 if you'd like to be part of the conversation. My guest is Megan Englert, founder of Out of the Box Parenting. Angelina, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi. How's it going, guys? Thanks for taking the time.
We're glad you called. What are you working on?
So I feel like I'm kind of the opposite of everything you were just saying. Mm-hmm. I feel like I have really high expectations for my kid, and he's almost five, so I feel like I need to mellow out, but I also feel as though he's smart enough. I know he's really smart, and he knows better, so I expect him to do better, but he's
mm-hmm.
also just been alive for almost 5 years, so I'm having a hard time being more patient, but I'm trying so hard to be patient.
Mm-hmm.
What are some things that work well for you?
I just try to be objective for a moment and step back and be like, okay, realistically, as a 4-year-old, should he like really be able to do this? You know, how mad is this? How necessary is it for me to get this mad? But I guess I just, I usually can try to keep calm, but then when he pushes me and pushes me,
mm-hmm.
it's like, all right, buddy, like, I know you know it. I know what you're doing. That's enough. And then, but I want to be that parent that's just like, oh, la, 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 it's all good, like forever endless patience. And I don't know how to do it.
Yeah, well, sometimes I have that la, la, la tone, but my brain is screaming.
Oh, yeah.
So it's sometimes I'm thinking, am I really sounding Mary Poppins right now or not? So one of the tools that I love to use, and this is called my parenting cheat sheet. It's on my website at otbparenting.com in the store tab. It's a free download, and it's a cheat sheet that's based on how you are feeling. So it's one of those little tools that you can use to ground yourself first and kind of take care of yourself for a second. And then you empathize with your child, and then you get a direction. So in the moments where he's really testing you, how would you say you are feeling? More angry, frustrated.
Probably like, yeah, absolutely.
Annoyed.
Definitely frustrated, annoyed, you know, and like just I feel like the impatience coming across, the irritation, okay. and I really don't okay. want him to feel that way. He doesn't deserve to feel that way. He's just trying to figure things out.
Right. Okay. And that's great that you have learned that too.
Good awareness, Angelina.
In the moment, it's hard to think that way. And trust me, I had that this morning, and I'm doing this for my living now. So, if you're feeling, you know, annoyed, irritated, worried, or guilty, usually, you know, that means he might be feeling ignored or insignificant in some way. And that's not a slight on you at all. It's just kind of what's happening in the moment.
For sure.
And what he needs is positive attention and ways to involve him. So if you can say, can you hold my hand and we'll walk together to go pick out these lemons at the store, or whatever you're doing in the moment, just find a way to involve him in what you're doing then. And if it's more angry and frustrated, he probably feels out of control and like he doesn't belong or a little bit. And the only thing kids can control at that age is their behavior. And so they're going to push it because we can't stop them from saying something or moving their body a certain way. So we have to just kind of offer them choices. So if it's to get into the car, you can say, would you like to hop to the car? Would you like to run to the car? You know, and just kind of switch things up in the moment, because he does know. He knows. And he wants you to tell him till you're blue in the face, because it'll wear you out.
Because it's attention.
It's attention.
Positive or negative is attention.
It's attention. Right. Yeah. And one of the things, too, and this is something that comes up a lot with the clients that I work with, is a lot of times we're telling our kids, I need you to calm down. And a lot of the prep work hasn't been done before, which is teaching them how to calm down. We just kind of assume they know how to do it. And then when we think about ourselves, do we know how to do it? I didn't know how to take a deep breath until I was in grad school, you know, like the correct way. So sometimes you have to think about, yes, they're smart, but what have they practiced? What have they actually learned at this point?
And Angelina, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No, please go ahead.
Well, so you can find that information on Megan's website, otbparenting.com. And my little side note that I'll add is to make sure that you've sat down at some point and thought about, what are my expectations for me as a parent? What are the things that I expect myself to do, and who I wanted myself to be, and what is realistic? What can I actually expect from myself? Because sometimes when you say, I have high expectations for my four-year-old, it's that you have really high expectations for yourself as a parent, and you're not seeing that represented in how your child's behaving. And so maybe just reconfiguring what your goals are for yourself as a parent. You know, what is it I want to be able to do realistically by the end of the day? And for a lot of parents, if you can get your child to bed by 7:30, having read them a book and given them a bath, that's a win.
Yep.
And everything else will just have to, you know, be what it is. But try to choose one or two things a day that you know you can accomplish or feel you should be able to accomplish, and then call it a win.
Yeah. And write those things down.
Yes.
Put them on a post-it note or a journal or something. Write down what you did. And the next morning, that's the first thing you look at and you read. And it'll start your intention for the day again.
Does that help?
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you guys so much. I appreciate that. I'm definitely going to check out the website to see that list of stuff for sure.
Thanks for calling in. Enjoy your day. You're doing a great job, Angelina.
Too.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm with my guest, Megan Englert. We're talking about parenting. We'd love to have you join the conversation. 805-781-3875. We'll be back to take your call.
There's a whole nother conversation going on in a parallel universe where nothing breaks and nothing hurts. There's a waltz playing frozen in time, blades of grass on tiny bare feet. I look at you and you're looking at me. Could you beat me up? Give me a minute. I don't know what I'd say in it. Probably just stare, happy just to be there, holding your face. Beat me up. Let me be lighter. Tired of being a fighter.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. That's Pink singing Beam Me Up about her experience as a mom. Our number is 805-781-3875. Kelly, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Hello. I'm calling because I am wondering about sleep training and sleeping with young children, specifically, particularly if you travel a lot with your kids. Mm-hmm. If you have any advice or suggestions on how to keep things regular, how to keep their schedule regular, if you're going between time zones, what do?
Whoa.
You keep them on one time zone. Yeah. Just all, if you have any advice on how to make sleeping easier.
Right. Well, I do have a sleep guru, somebody that I look to for my own sleep questions, and her name is Corinne, which is spelled K-E-R-R-I-N, Edmonds, and her business is called Meet You in Dreamland, and she knows a lot about sleep.
Awesome.
She helped me coach my kids through sleep. She's got great travel tips about on the go, different products that you can get for blackout around your stroller or in a pack and play, things like that. But it's she's amazing. She's taught me about different sleep waves and things of that nature. So she's great.
And also, thank you for calling, Kelly. That's a great question. What about sleep training in general, because I know there's a lot of controversy about what was your experience with your children? Where did you end up on that?
I didn't want to do it.
Okay.
I just thought that they would pick it up somehow, you know.
Did they get tired enough and pass out?
Or something. Yeah, like I said before, infants were not my thing. And my daughter was sick when she was born, so a lot of the time I didn't want to leave her alone. You know, she had seizures when she was in the hospital. She didn't after she left, but that was one of my concerns. And I had some irrational concerns too about sleep that might have been a little bit of postpartum depression issues, possibly. I'm not really sure. She was 7 months old when we contacted Corinne from Meet You in Dreamland or Meet Me in Dreamland. And at that point, she was sleeping maybe twice a day, 30-minute naps, if that, and woke up 7 to 10 times a night.
Oh my goodness.
So overtired. And she was a happy baby. But when we started working on a plan that Corinne gave us, which met our expectations as far as how we wanted to be there for her and how we wanted to teach her how to sleep, and within a week, she was sleeping 6 to 6 and napping twice a day. So it was amazing.
Which is something I think also that new parents don't understand is that keeping your child awake does not cause them to sleep longer at night. It actually has the reverse effect.
They wake up earlier.
So the better the children nap during the day, the longer they sleep at night. Keeping a child awake till 8 or 10 at night doesn't make them sleep longer in the morning. They'll wake up earlier because they're overtired and they go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
A child doesn't tell you they're ready to go to sleep by crying and being miserable because that means they're overtired, right? The key is that you have to get kids down before they get too tired,
but putting them down when they're awake so they can learn how to do it on their own.
To self-soothe.
And that brings me to another point that I like to bring up about crying
a
little bit, in that it's really uncomfortable for us to hear our kids cry when they're struggling with something new.
Absolutely.
And sometimes they do have to work things out, not to the point where they're throwing up, of course, you know, a reasonable amount. Sometimes when things are hard, they have to get through it. And then there's the times where we want them to cry, like they run into the street and we hold them sternly and say, you may not do that, as scary as we can. Mm-hmm. And they just smile at you.
The times that you hope that they're going to respond with
exactly.
a little fear, yes.
And both times with they're crying hard and you don't like it, or they're not crying and you don't like it, doesn't mean they're not learning. You know, it's all part of that experience.
So let's talk about control, because we
yes.
started the show a little bit about it. I think it's one of the primary things that parents struggle with. Who is in control, or do I have control, or what does it look like? And you wrote about the control challenge.
Yes.
And I had mixed feelings about it. So talk about...
You did, you?
Yeah. I did have mixed feelings about it. So explain what the control challenge is to you and the rules, and then we can discuss.
So my my daughter was having a really rough couple of weeks. She was going through a physical growth spurt, hitting the counter where she wasn't before and getting mad about it, a intellectual growth spurt as well, and she couldn't control much, so we were butting heads a lot, and I wasn't being as patient as I should have been. And so I said, you know, we're going to take 15 minutes a day, and you are going to be the boss for 15 minutes, and you can do what you would like as long as it's safe. Ahead of time, we joke around. I say, you can't tell me I have to run in the street. You can't tell me to go stand in the toilet. You can't. And she laughed, and she knew. And I know her well enough, too, that what she really wanted was just to do whatever she wanted with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so we set a timer, and I said, when the timer goes off, it's time for me to be in charge and put you to bed. And so she just, I think she asked Jesse, my husband, to be the monster the first time we did it. And I was a baby and she was the mom. And we just ran around the house screaming for 15 minutes together while brother was asleep. And then she, that was the first night in a long time where she went to bed content and didn't toss and turn, didn't sing, didn't yell for more water or go to the bathroom again. She just went right to sleep. And we've been doing it the last few days, and it's been helping. And when she does have a moment where she wants to be in charge of me and really yell no in my face, I'll say, you know what, let's save that for your control time later, for boss mom around time later. And she goes, okay, and then she stops. And then when it's boss around time, she just goes, let's play a game. It's not really very, it's not like she's stepping on me and jumping on me or anything like that. It's actually very sweet. It's more just a special time that she gets to have.
So just choosing a control challenge was kind of an overall way of calling, maybe giving your child an opportunity to call the shots.
Yes.
Because maybe it's just the word control I struggle with. And
sure.
That's my old school parenting thing.
Yes.
But I love the idea of saying, I'm going to give you 15 minutes to call the shots before you go to bed tonight so you can really feel like you've had an opportunity to be in charge.
Yeah. And one day she actually wanted to go into the office where she's not typically allowed because of the things that are in there. And I said, sure, I'll come with you. And she just looked at all the things for 15 minutes and then she was done. So
it satisfied the curiosity.
It did. Yeah.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Megan Englert, founder of Out of the Box Parenting. It's a consulting business where she designs parenting plans.
Sure. Yep.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
That are unique to your strengths as parents, your temperament as parents, your goals and expectations for your family. Mm-hmm. So instead of just picking up a book and trying to fit your parenting into what the book suggests, Megan's creating booklets for you to use that work for your family.
Yes.
So the next question, time outs?
Time ins versus time outs?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I know time outs have gotten also a kind of a... Mm-hmm. fallen out of favor over the last few years.
Yeah.
So talk about the time in versus time out.
Well, you know, if there's a struggle going on or something's happening, like if my kids are fighting together, you know, I sometimes, if I have to, I will separate them if I need to. But for the most part, I come in and we process together. It's about learning what went wrong in the situation, how we can handle it best next time, and working on our coping skills in the moment too. A lot of times when we do a timeout and you say, sit in the corner for 3 minutes, is how old you are, and then you come back, they're just thinking about how mad they are that they had to leave and that no one was listening to them in the moment. And
they just need to stir up more anger.
They just need to be heard at the moment. And sometimes if you need to keep yourself safe and them safe, fine, do it. Safety always trumps everything else, you know. But I like to save time ins for the kids where you sit and process with them. In the beginning, it's a lot of work. And then after a while, I will hear things, not every day, but some days, where my son will say, can I use that when you're done? And she'll say, sure, I'll set a timer. And then I think, where is there a timer? What's happening? And then I hear her say, beep, and then she passes it over, and I don't have to get up at all.
So they figure out their own way to negotiate.
They figured it out, their conflict resolution. That's what times in are for. It's for learning coping skills, conflict resolution, and processing how they're feeling in the moment. And the timeout I save for the adults. If they need a timeout, go take it. Let them follow you. Let them see how you calm down so that they can learn how to do it themselves as well.
One of the things I always encouraged my parents to do when I was doing parent coaching was to have a parental timeout. That every day when everyone got home from work, mom and dad are home from work, that they took 15 minutes just for the two of them away from the children first thing. Mm-hmm. And to create it as such a routine so that the kids knew that that was going to happen every night. Because if you don't take that time for yourself right away when you get home from work to process, check in, kiss your spouse, hold their hand, remind yourself why you're married and why you had children, you may not have that time for the rest of the day. And also you kind of need to be connected to your partner so that your parenting goes more smoothly throughout the night. So that would be one of the things I encourage parents in the busyness of your life and your days to make sure that you carve out that parent time out and to get your kids used to say, mom and dad are going to sit on the couch and talk and you can play over here or play over there or, you know, watch this show for 15 minutes. It's a treat for you, but we're going to talk and this is our time. And at the beginning, your kids are going to want your attention, just like when you get on the phone, they want your attention.
Sure.
But if you do this consistently, consistently enough, day after day, they'll start to even ask you, are you going to do your parent time out? Mm-hmm. Is this your parent time? Because it's also really healthy for kids to see parents doing well. When they see their parents loving each other, laughing with each other, mm-hmm. enjoying their time together, children feel safe mm-hmm. because they know their world is okay. So that's something from my parenting
book. Very helpful.
Book. Yes. Rick, thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight?
I wanted to share how we got our kids to go to sleep as soon as it got dark without even trying.
All right. What's your trick?
Okay. We only ate natural food. We didn't give them any sugar, so they weren't hyper at all. And we gave them a lot of freedom, except for, we didn't allow them to be violent towards each other and stuff. But the main thing was we never told them when they had to go to sleep. We always let them go to sleep when they were tired. And as a consequence, as soon as it got dark, they would just go to sleep. We couldn't keep them up. Hmm. If it was New Year's Eve or anything special, they would go to sleep.
They had their own internal clock working.
Totally.
Yeah.
And all the other parents wondered, how do you do this? And we didn't do anything, you know?
Yeah, you kind of let them know that the expectation was at some point they would hit the hay and they found their way.
No, not at all. No? They could stay up if they wanted to. I mean, when they were little, you know, when the babies were still nursing and stuff, obviously they had a whole different schedule. But as soon as they were weaned and you know, just eating normal food and stuff, they had their own internal time clock. And I think not giving them sugar was an important thing because they weren't like excited or mm-hmm. speedy.
And screens as well before bed. If you're watching screens before bed, that can make your brain really, really alert and awake as well.
Absolutely. Thank you, Rick. Yeah, I think there is something to the nutrition piece. I wish we had another mm-hmm. hour just to talk about nutrition.
Yes.
And keeping blood sugar steady throughout the day. And having meals at a fairly regular time. Mm-hmm. And I also feel like doing everything an hour earlier than you think you should. You know, a lot yeah. of times kids do better eating dinner at 5 mm-hmm. and getting in bed by 6:37, which is difficult for parents who get home from work at 6. And so I think that's one of the big challenges of modern life is that what works well for a child's natural rhythm doesn't really align with our work schedules, mm-hmm. makes it a challenge. Mm-hmm. And then about the screen piece, we could do a whole other hour about
right.
that. But yes, how many hours before bed do we turn off the screens? Is it two hours?
I think it's 1 to 2.
1 to 2 hours.
Yes.
So 1 to 2 hours before bedtime, there's no screens. And then you might find also if you do things at the same time every day, your mm-hmm. children will fall into that routine. You know how your cats or your mm-hmm. dog shows up for their food at the
they
same
know.
Time
yep.
every day? Well, if you get your kids ready for bed, if you feed them at 5 and you get them ready for bed at mm-hmm. 6, they'll be tired at 7. If you do it every night, they start to be ready for those things.
Yeah. And the time change is coming.
Yes.
And one of the tricks that I have done that I learned from the Meet You in Dreamland is starting the a few days beforehand, move things up 15 minutes. Mm. And the next day, 15 more minutes. And then by Sunday, you're on the right time.
So everybody falls into place.
Yes. And then spending a lot of time out in the sun over the weekend because the sun can set your body clock well.
So in the last few minutes, here's what I'd like to leave people with.
Yes.
Given the busyness of our lives and that 75% of families have two income working mm-hmm. parents, what would be three or so things that are must-dos for parents if they can only do three things a day? What would you feel mm-hmm. are the most important parenting skills that they need to utilize mm-hmm. for their children to thrive?
Work on your own coping skills and find what helps you in the moment when you need a break okay. And model those things as much as possible. That's going to help your mental well-being and model for them how to have their own well-being as well. Learn a few games that are short, quick, and have quality time, not time in numbers, but just quick. One example could be look in my eyes and see if you can see yourself. In my eyes like a mirror. Now stick out your tongue. Can you see that? And now you're playing a game while making eye contact. And it's just really, it's very connecting. And then you're set for the next hour or so that you need to be. So learning some quick quality games to do. It doesn't have to be staying busy and finding all these activities to do. Another one is just being mindful of the language and what you're asking them to do. Just think about that a little bit. You know, like I said before, if you're saying calm down, think, do they actually know how to do that? If you're using the word no, try to make it a learning experience if possible, but still use it for dangerous situations so that they can learn that no is actually a powerful word, that it should be heard from them, and they should listen to it as well when it's when important.
And when all else fails, mm-hmm. when you feel like you don't know what to do, how can you keep a safe space for your kids? How can you create limits that are going to keep everyone safe at home?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like without turning to the authoritarian, yelling and screaming in the locker in the room. Like, what is that thing you can do in the moment that mm-hmm. might calm the whole house?
I like resets. Okay. I call it, sometimes you can just say, everyone turn off the lights, let's go find a pillow and a bed, and we're going to set the alarm, and we're going to go to sleep, pretending to go to sleep, mm-hmm. and when we wake up, let's talk about what we're going to do differently. Make a new day in the middle of the day, if you need to.
I love that.
I also do a reset where I say, where is your feeling in your body, and what is that feeling? Let's take it out, if you can, pull as much of it out as you can, throw it in the air, put it in the trash can, let's find where that feeling is that you want, let's put it in your body, and then you do it too, to model where your feelings are. And I did the other day, I said, I need patience and some deep breaths. And my daughter and my son just found some for me in make-believe land and gave them to me. So those little quick resets can be really helpful in the moment to just chill out.
I love the reset idea of turning off all the lights, everyone find a pillow and just lay down mm-hmm. for a second.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great way to kind of, I think as parents, even if you don't have kids at home, it's a great idea in the middle of the day when you're feeling spun out to just turn off the lights, mm-hmm. start again. Let's wake up all over again with a new attitude.
Yep, new day.
All right, so if people want to get in touch with you, how do they find you?
They can email me at otbparenting@gmail.com, or they can follow me on Instagram at Out of the Box Parenting, or at Facebook at otbparenting.
I'm proud of you, Megan.
Thank you.
You're doing great work. This has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Follow us on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org and podcast our show and share it with others through Apple Podcasts. Thank you for supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
You can't fool me. I saw you when you came out. You got your mama's taste, but you got my mouth. You will always have a part of me. Nobody else is ever gonna see Gracie girl. With your cards to your chest, walking on your toes. What you got in the box, only Gracie knows. I would never try to make you be anything you didn't really want to be, Gracie girl. Life flies by and says, watching TV. I won't move you an inch, even though my arm's asleep. See girl.